Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. Day 11 of the Ghislaine Maxwell trial. The defense's first day. I don't know. I mean, as poor a job as I thought the prosecution did, for the most part, the defense didn't do a great job today either, which is a good thing. And remember, we had 3 days off. We had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off starting today because Judge Nathan was in Washington, D.C. testifying. She has been nominated by Biden to be on the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. And yesterday she spent most of the day being asked questions by the Senate Judiciary Committee. They didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't read a transcript. I didn't see any questions about Epstein, about the trial. Obviously, there's a trial going on, and there's not much they can... She's not going to answer, because then there'd be a mistrial. But I thought that somebody would say, what's your opinion on whatever? Just something. At least get the question, and then she'll go, I can't answer that. But it was just basic appeals court stuff. You know, just... Second Amendment, whether states have a legitimate interest in ensuring, you know, voter registration rules, stuff like that. And it is interesting that she was nominated and had to do this while the case was going on. So the first person that was brought to testify for Ghislaine was Kimberly Espinosa. And she worked as Ghislaine's executive assistant, and she testified that she respected Ghislaine and looked up to her. And she worked for her from 1996 until 2002. This was their first witness. I mean, she said what they wanted her to say. She said, I respected Ghislaine. I looked up to her very much. And it was so interesting because this Kimberly Espinosa said that that Epstein was known to pay for the education of employees' children, that he was a giver, that he was generous, and that he had given tickets to The Lion King on Broadway to almost all the employees who wanted to go. Recall, because Jane Doe had the whole Lion King thing, and Espinosa said that Jane and her family members stayed in one of several apartments owned by Epstein, which were commonly used by his friends. And she said that Epstein's employees thought of Jane Doe as his goddaughter. And that she said, I thought it was a loving relationship. And she said what they wanted her to say, that Espinosa had never seen Maxwell or Epstein engage in inappropriate activity with underage girls. And... Espinosa said, well, yeah, I never went to his Palm Beach house. And the other witnesses have described that as the site of the abuse. It was interesting. It did what it was supposed to do, I guess. But you're confined to just New York. You know who Jane Doe is, which is why they brought her. She has knowledge about the Lion King tickets, which is why they brought her. But she wasn't the strongest witness in the whole world. I didn't think so. And then I talked about this yesterday. Because remember, Ghislaine's lawyers wanted a couple of their witnesses, three of them, I think, just to be able to testify with their first name or a fake name. And it was a long shot. And the judge said no. Because it was unprecedented. And the reason that the victims got to do it is because they're victims. And if you made victims use their whole name or real name, then it would discourage other victims from coming forward. And that's essentially what Judge Nathan said. She said, if alleged victims of abuse were subject to publicity, harassment, and embarrassment, other alleged victims of sex crimes may be deterred from coming forward to report abuse. And I think we've seen that with Jane Doe. Everybody knows who Jane Doe is. It's not hard. But you have to respect, you know, that she has chosen to use the name Jane Doe, and she's still been subject to her horrible harassment and doxing and things like this. Why? Are there that many Maxwell supporters out there? It's kind of crazy what Jane Doe has had to deal with since she started testifying. And then I said it was a little bit different with Kate. Because Kate has said her name. Kate was, there was no illegal sexual activity, as the judge said. So it's a little bit different. But again, I still didn't actually say her name, but everybody knows her name too. Like I said, that's a little bit different. Because Jane Doe was 14. Kate, according to the judge, was legally able to consent. And there was no illegal sexual activity. So she's essentially just a witness to what Epstein and others did, and not necessarily a victim, at least according to the judge. But I still didn't say the name. But the judge said none of the defense witnesses intend to testify to sensitive personal topics or sexual conduct. Rather, they're all anticipated to deny misconduct by Ms. Maxwell and Mr. Epstein and didn't qualify as victims under the law. Straight truth. I get that. And the defense hasn't said which three witnesses were seeking anonymity. And Maxwell's lawyers had said, hey, they might not be willing to testify unless they can testify under a pseudonym or a first name. But Judge Nathan said, hey, that happens all the time in high-profile cases. People don't necessarily want to testify. People don't want their name out there. But there's ways to do it. All you have to do is subpoena them. And they have to come to court. And they have to testify. It was a long shot. And I honestly don't think the defense really even cared. I think that they just decided, what the heck, we'll make the motion. Just to see. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I think that's what... And also, the lawyers get to bill a few more hours. Now, I'll tell you, the person that everybody was kind of looking forward to hearing from today, and I was Elizabeth Loftus. She's a professor at UC Irvine, and she's been called to stand in some, I think it's 300 trials since 1975. So 50 years she's been doing this. Always called by defense attorneys. And it's an attempt to raise doubts about the accounts of accusers. She is a part of the False Memory Syndrome Foundation. Well, was. It disbanded in 2019. But that's the one that had on the board Jolly West and Martin Oren. Of course, those guys go back to MK Ultra. I don't think she was ever on the board. She was just a member of the foundation. But she is the one that you call to really go after the victims. I mean, because that's what False Memory Syndrome Foundation was about. It was created by two parents who they said that their daughter had said, oh, you know, dad molested me and all these kind of things. And dad said, that's not true. And you're just having false memories that are being brought up. And this foundation was set up by these parents. And they continued, at least I think the mom continued to run it until 2019 when it was disbanded. And there's others that have taken its place. But essentially, it was just to knock down victims. And Loftus was, she was who the defense called for Weinstein and Bill Cosby and Michael Jackson and O.J. Simpson and Robert Durst, Ted Bundy. I mean, she went up there for Ted Bundy. And what Loftus says is that memories are fragile and malleable. And testified that they can be distorted by language, emotion, and misinformation. I agree that memories are fragile. And that they can be distorted by language, emotion, and misinformation. I get that. I mean, think about some memory that you can't quite dredge up. And then let's say it's a memory you had as a child, but you can't quite dredge it up. And then your parent or whoever was with you at that age says, well, this is what happened. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not, because you don't have that full memory, but then you associate that with it, and then you can even assign things to that memory. And if it gets reinforced over the years, then you go, oh, that must be the way it happened. So I don't have a problem with that. But the whole false memory thing, where it just comes out of completely thin air, that's the part that I don't necessarily prescribe to who. You know, it's just, if somebody says, I was molested when I was 12, and somebody goes, no, you weren't, that's just false. But it's my memory. No, it's false. That's not a memory that you have. But let's say somebody goes, oh, they say I was molested at 12. And somebody goes, yeah, and they say, I don't remember. And then somebody says, well, I think it happened here because that's what you were doing at that age. And then they could assign some kind of stuff to go with that memory. But Elizabeth Loftus is always talking about the nature of memory, the workings of memory, false memory. And she says that she's conducted hundreds of experiments on memory and determined that exposure to falsehoods can cause people to form false memories that they regard as real. They fall sway to the misinformation, she said. It becomes their memory. I get part of that. The thing is that she's so good on the stand. Yes, she's obviously lost a lot of cases, but look what the cases they're trying to bring her in on. She's won a lot of them, too. I mean, lots. And when in the Weinstein, when she was there to question the testimony by Annabelle Osiora, and to tell the jurors in that case, the memories not only fade over time, but can often be skewed. And the prosecutors had asked Judge Nathan to exclude from evidence Loftus's opinions on topics, like how memories are created and how false memories can be described with confidence and detail and emotion. But they had no shot at that. None. Because she's an expert witness. They're not going to be able to get her out for that at all. I think that they were hoping that the judge would rule a little bit on their side because the judge had helped out the defense on the prosecution's expert and the things that their expert was allowed to testify to and not allowed to testify to. It just, again, there's a difference between a false memory and a memory that's been reinforced with something else. And it's just such a narrow kind of needle and thread. And Loftus testified about some of the topics that the government had wanted to avoid. Because if you go back to all the times that the defense was cross-examining the prosecution witnesses, what were they doing? They were just trying to find little gaps, little holes. Oh, you remembered this, you remembered that. Especially when it came to Jane Doe. Because her story changed from the time that she was 14 until she was interviewed in 2019. And then it changed again for the trial. So they've been trying to trip up witnesses on recollections. When did things happen? Are you sure that's when it happened? And all those discrepancies, again, between what they told investigators and what they're saying in court. And then, of course, they brought up the whole drugs and alcohol thing, especially when it came to Carolyn. And Loftus said that memory doesn't work like a recording device. And describe three stages that cover how memories are formed. The acquisition stage, when events occur. The retention stage, when memories of those events are essentially stored. And the retrieval stage, when someone may be asked to recount an experience. And that post-event suggestions, including disinformation, questioning by someone with an agenda, or even a conversation between two people about the past, can cause memory contamination. And that's what I was talking about. The memory contamination. But it's still a memory. But it can be contaminated. Jane Doe has the memory of being molested when she was 14. Now, can the memory be contaminated about whether Epstein walked up to her first or Maxwell walked up to her first? It doesn't change the fact that she was molested. But Loftus is saying, oh, she just fabricated the whole molesting part. Not just a contamination of it. And she also said that news reports or questions from law enforcement can also affect memory. And she said people can start out with ambiguous memories of certain events, but then if those events are labeled in a certain way, they can start to remember their experiences as closer to that label. Got it. But what she has to convince the jury is that Jane Doe just made it all up. And her memories have no basis in reality. And trying to screw over somebody because they can't remember Lion King was 1994 or 1997 is just, come on. And Maxwell's lawyer asked whether the inclusion of very vivid details means that a memory is accurate. And Loftus replied that false memories can be just as vivid or detailed as real ones. But again, Loftus is saying false memories. She's trying to confuse the jury. And again, she's very, very good at what she does. That is why she is a hired gun, and a very expensive hired gun. Because she's interchanging false memories and contaminated memories. So the jury's going to go, wow. You know, if you don't get the delineation of the two, then you're going to think that everybody just has these false memories. And Loftus says that false memories, that people can be confident about them and that people can be emotional about them. And while cross-examining Loftus, prosecutor said, hey, you favor defendants. Of course she favors defendants. They pay more. I think that she said that she had testified in 150 criminal trials and all but one of them for the defense. And even wrote a book, Witness for the Defense. That's her gig. And it's up to the prosecutors to, and I don't think that they did that great of a job on it, is to really try and explain what I'm explaining to you about a false memory and a contaminating memory. And maybe they'll have to do it in their closing argument because it's tough to do it in questions, especially against somebody like Loftus. You're just not going to get her to give you the answers that you want, especially these prosecutors are super young. I don't think any of them are over the age of 30. But somehow they're going to have to convince the jury or tell the jury that, hey, these things happened. The little details around them might be fuzzy. Maybe that's contaminated, but none of these memories are false. And maybe they could have asked something, a question like that of Loftus. Are contaminating memories the same as false memories? So they can get that sense. And don't forget, Carolyn is still the winner in this. Carolyn, drugs, everything, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Yeah, she was going to Epstein because she needed the money for drugs. But she remembered it. And her boyfriend at the time remembered it. It was contemporaneous. That's what happened. Now, does Carolyn remember how many times she went over there, or if Epstein called her sometimes, or she called Epstein? What does that matter? It doesn't. It doesn't change the fact that she was over there when she was 14, 15, 16 years old. That's the fact. It doesn't really matter about the fuzzy little things, and I wish the prosecution had done a better job of just saying, hey, you're telling, you know, to get Loftus to admit, so you're saying that Carolyn invented all these 100 trips or 200 trips to Epstein's house. Why would she be going there 200 times or 100 times? Every single one of those 100 is a fake memory? Ask these questions. And the prosecution asked whether people who are subject to repeated traumatic experiences had reliable memories of those events. And Loftus says the more times you're exposed to something, the better your memory. Okay, that was a point for the prosecution. And going back to Carolyn, because how many times was she exposed to something? So the better her memory. It might be different with some other witness that was only with Epstein once or twice. So it's hard to tell, obviously, how the jury took the Loftus stuff. Juries can be very numb to expert witnesses. Now, the thing about Loftus is because she's been doing it so long, she's very good at engaging the jury and explaining it so they can understand it. But it's such a hard topic also to discuss, but at this point, she's very good at it. But I think it still all comes down to Carolyn. And I don't see or hope that the defense can overcome Carolyn. So I think Carolyn is the reason that Maxwell goes down. And if they interview the jury after, I bet you that's what they say. All right, you guys, I will talk to you later.